This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio. I'm Dean Holland. Joined by the incomparable goddess of the garden, Charlie Dobbin. How are you? Well, you want to start the day off right, you know?
I'm dancing in my home studio. I love that intro music. It just gets my toes tapping.
Yeah. We'll have to post the dance that happens every year. Maybe we'll post it on the internet someday.
No.
The dance. Yeah. So how has your week been?
Oh, it's been busy. You know, for somebody who's semi-retired, I feel like I'm running around nonstop. But you know what? I love the rain. I'm a huge fan. I'm not going to complain. But what I will say,
I love the rain as well.
All this rain is making the weeds grow really fast at my place. Gotcha. So every time I step outside, it's like, oh, more weeds, more weeds, more weeds. Yesterday, Elliot was trying to mow the lawn. I was trying to, you know, do the edging of the lawn, and it started to rain, and we kept going in the rain, and then finally it was pouring. I went, okay, I guess we can't do this. Back to weeds.
Yeah, the rain is a bit of a double-edged sword. I know it has looked just beautiful here because we had really great rain because it came down so slowly, right? And everything is just lush and green, but it does then grow really fast, for sure.
Yeah. So, I like that double-edged sword. So just quickly, do you want to give the numbers? And then
I do want to give the numbers out.
A couple of things that are happening.
Yeah, okay, I'll give the numbers out. Yeah, anywhere in Toronto, please give us a call, 416-360-0740. And anywhere toll-free in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Please do let Carlos know if you are the first-time caller, and he will let me know, and then we will give you your garden wings. There we are.
Yeah,
we want you to call often. We want you to call early, and one question per call, please. And we actually do already have callers on the line, so please make sure you call, and we'll be happy to get to your question. What announcements have you got there, Charlie?
A couple of quick things. I'll be speaking via Zoom to the Milton Horticultural Society this Monday, whatever that is. I think it's the 13th. My topic is roses, why, how, and when. Now, that if you want to participate in that Zoom event, you'll have to join the Milton Hort Society. So that's MiltonHortSociety.com. That's number one. Put on your calendars for Saturday, June 25th, the Long Branch Garden Tour.ca. This is a group that has done annual garden tours of just about everybody's garden, I think, who lives in the Long Branch area is on the tour. So it's 25-plus gardens. It's completely free, 10 to 4, Saturday, June 25th. And it's really designed as a community-building event. And, of course, we're not quite post-pandemic, but we're on hopefully the downside of the pandemic. People are really, really wanting to get back together, to rejoin the communities, to share, see each other's faces. So that's a fun one for sure. And then later in early July, July 10th, Brampton's doing an interesting thing. It's called Quilts in the Garden Tour. So believe it or not, actual homemade quilts will be on display inside beautiful gardens in Brampton. So for more information, interesting. Sunday, July 10th, 10 to 3, it is a $15 event to participate, but you are going to be able to buy plants and quilts along the way. More information, www.BramptonHort.org.
Okay, everything sounds great. Have to take a quick break, but we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Indeed, this is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. I'm Dean Holland with Charlie Dobbin. And Charlie, I was thinking about you this week because I was sitting on my back deck and a hummingbird sort of hopped over, probably from next door because he has tons of them. And I thought, I remembered that you had one stuck in your garage. Whatever happened with it?
Okay, so I got a great, well, I got, the hummingbird did find its way out, but I got a great email. I want to, you know, big thank you to Suzanne Schultz. She's a Pennsylvania State Master Gardener, sent me an email and said, to avoid getting hummingbirds stuck in your garage when the door is open, realize there's that little rope with a handle on it, which is used for manually opening and closing garage doors during a power failure. She said that handle is always red, and they see that red handle. The hummingbird comes into the garage, and then it's completely confused. So, you know, do something about that red handle. Well, I did. I got black tape right away, covered the handle in black tape, and I want to thank Susan for that. That was just a wonderful tip. So everybody who has an automatic or electric garage door, make sure you've got that handle covered or painted black so that the hummingbirds do not get attracted into your garage when it's open.
Gotcha. And now Charlie forever has her garage door open at night because she can't see the handle.
No, if I had it open at night, I'd have foxes and lions and tigers and bears with me,
man. Oh, my. Okay. Here we go. My goodness, we got calls to get to. Let's get to Carol. Carol in Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Carol.
Hello. I'm calling about my rhubarb.
Mm-hmm. Your rhubarb?
Yes. I have beautiful rhubarb. It's nice and thick, and it's in the south side of the house, right against the house, and it's in the vegetable garden. It gets lots of water, and it's in sandy soil, so we have beautiful rhubarb.
Yeah, perfect.
And it flowered this year because we didn't get to cutting it soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I lost all that rhubarb. So I just wondered if the rest of the rhubarb would be okay.
Oh, probably, but you're right. Once a plant like rhubarb flowers, the leaves tend to be very small and shriveled and not nearly as robust as they are pre-flowering. So if you see the flower coming up, just cut it off.
Yeah, we did.
It's like lettuce,
beautiful,
right? Lettuce, spinach.
Too.
We call it bolting when the flowers. It's interesting it flowered so early, but your conditions sound perfect.
Yeah, they are. We've had good rhubarb every year, and this is the first year it's flowered.
Sure, and you'll have lots of good rhubarb next year. So for this year, just try and avoid letting any more of it flower.
Okay, will do, and thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Yeah, thanks. We are, my wife's upstairs as we speak. She is in the rhubarb. Yeah, she's making muffins, and I'm a big fan. In fact, we have a very small patch, which we would love to make bigger, so I'd probably have to move it. But and so we supplement that by buying some at the local markets.
Oh, my. You love your rhubarb that much.
I do love rhubarb. Yeah. Yeah. We're big rhubarb fans.
Create some conditions like Carol has. Like she said, you know, sandy, well-drained soil, lots of sun, you know, obviously maintain water as necessary. And you can grow rhubarb easily.
Fabulous. And if anybody in the meantime would care to donate some rhubarb, I would be happy to take it. Okay.
Just leave it on your doorstep.
Just leave it at the doorstep. You got it. We're going to Oakville now. We have Earl on the line. Good morning. Welcome to the Garden Show, Earl.
Hi, Charlie. It's been a long time.
Yeah, morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How often should you fertilize the grass in the beginning of the season?
Good question. The beginning of the season being the spring, many people will apply a spring fertilizer on their lawn if they haven't done a fall fertilizer, like a dormant end of season fertilizing. I'm a big fan of the fall fertilizing or winterizing fertilizer, and I never usually spring fertilize at all. But I watch the lawn. With all the rain we've had this year, and our lawn is a fairly young lawn. It's only 2 years old. Yeah. We did just recently fertilize again with what's considered a maintenance fertilizer. So that's not super high nitrogen the way we do in the spring. That's more of a balanced fertilizer just to feed all those little plants, green them up, and help keep them thick. Because the thicker the lawn is, the fewer weeds you're going to have.
Yeah, thank you very much, Charlie.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Earl. Yeah, over the years, I think we're probably less fertilized people. We are more into overseeding. I like that, you know. But we did put down some fertilizer last fall.
Good.
That is
That's
a slow release stuff. Yeah, and I think we've really noticed the difference. It's nice.
Yeah, and that if you're only going to, like, if like you have a very established, you know, 30, 40-year-old lawn.
Yeah.
If you're only going to do one fertilizer a year, do what you did, the fall or late fall winterizer fertilizer. And you're right. Old established lawns are great. They don't really need our help. It's just the young ones that often need a little support.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm going to give those numbers out again. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere in the province of Ontario, it is a toll-free call, 1-866-740-4740. Please give us a call. However, we do have to take our next break. We will be right back with more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. I'm Dean Holland, and we are back. And we have callers. We'll get to one of them right now. Let's go to Dorchester. We have Diane on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Diane.
Good morning. I love watching your healing gardens. Keep it coming. And I have a rhubarb question, but it's a little different. The rhubarb was dying off for the last year or two, and I took your advice, Charlie. I put the sheet compost on it, and I was so pleasantly surprised, absolutely amazingly surprised, because we love rhubarb, too, in every form, pies and muffins and everything. But our problem is the leaves that are green and round, they have this rust, little circles of rust starting to form on them, almost like, you know, in the fall when it's the last of the rhubarb. And then also some of the leaves that don't have the rust on it, something's eating it. And pardon me, it's not rabbits, because our backyard is rabbit-proof. We have a Jack Russell dog, and he would kill them, so unfortunately.
Huh. Okay, so I'm just looking here. Rhubarb turning, because, I mean, we know that when, as we were mentioning, it's been a moist, thank goodness we've had some rain this spring, which is great. We're loving that. But when we have high humidity and lots of rain, we do tend to have more fungal diseases. So they're just looking here. The spots are, why are my rhubarb leaves turning orange? Fungus thrives, airflow is restricted. So, yeah, I mean, just as with any fungal disease, number one, it's environmental. With high humidity, lots of rain, poor air circulation, many plants will develop fungal diseases we might not have ever seen before. So take it in stride. It's not something that you would, you can't cure fungal diseases. You can only prevent them. And of course, you never know when you need to be on the ball in terms of prevention, except remember that going forward, you may need to dig up and move your rhubarb so that it's better spaced apart. Rhubarb tends to get very, very compact and densely growing, and then you end up with poor air and sun penetrating into the plant, and you start getting some red spots, orange spots. Little critters start being able to live within the patch. So a good idea for full sun, well-drained soil, as Carol mentioned she has. But you know, just like irises, every now and then we have to divide them. We have to dig them up, divide them, and spread them out. So it might just be a case of something like that.
Chewing them off. Like, I mean, half the leaf is missing, and these are healthy leaves, mm-hmm. and it's right down the vein kind of in the middle. One half of it's missing, and it's like you'd think you had a cow or a horse in there taking a big bite out of them.
Chewing away at it, except they probably wouldn't. I wonder, you know, we've got that situation going on with what used to be called the gypsy moths, but are now called the spongy moths. Let me just quickly look here. Or maybe what we should do is leave that with me, and let me see if I can just we'll go on to other callers. But keep listening, and I will do my best to see what I can figure out, Diane.
And I'll keep listening. Thank you.
Thanks, Diane. I got to say, I was a little bit, I was a little bit disappointed by Diane's question. She said she had a little bit of a different question about rhubarb. I thought maybe she wanted my address. dropping
or one of your recipes.
or one. My grandmother, one of my favorite pies in the world is something my grandmother used to make every season. She made a rhubarb and custard pie, and I miss it immensely. And she, my grandmother's been gone for the better part of a decade now. And every summer she would make this rhubarb and custard pie. And that great, great memory for me, for sure.
Did you get her recipe before she died?
I didn't. I think I might be able to still reach out to my my uncle and see if he's got it. But my wife, certainly Gail, has been making various versions over the year, and they are also delightful. But
But you don't want to lose those old recipes that go with those fond memories, right?
No, you don't.
You got to keep those recipes. I know. I collected a bunch from both my mother and mother-in-law because they're just so important. Here's just a quick for Diane.
Okay.
I'm quickly reading here. What could be eating my rhubarb? Slugs, snails. Okay, that makes sense. All this rain, slugs and snails. Leaf beetles, beetles in general, and deer are the culprits you should look out for.
And Russell Terriers. That's what's going on here.
The most commonly known animals for eating rhubarb leaves. So slugs, snails, which are out at night, right? And they start on the edges and work their way in. Beetles and leaf beetles could chew anywhere. Of course, deer could have done it because they'll just take a big chunk of anything they want to eat.
Yeah. Okay. We have another caller on the line. We have a couple. Let's go to Sheila in Georgetown. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sheila.
Oh, good morning, Charlie. I love your show. I listen to it every week.
Thank you.
My question is about a rabbit or a hare. I'm not quite sure which, but he likes to make dinner off my rose plant. So I've made a tent for the rose to protect it, a plastic with netting around it. Is there anything I can put down on the flower bed that rabbits or hares don't like that could keep it away?
Okay, so when it comes to critters eating our plants, one thing we can do is we can set up barricades, like physical barriers. So like you said, you kind of tented the rose. Chicken wire can be very effective, just wrapped around on the outside of the rose. So we have something that's very thin and inobtrusive so that you can still enjoy your rose, but the rabbit can't get in and start chewing on it. Because rabbits do love roses. Well, everybody loves roses, right? They're very tasty plants, not to mention beautiful. I use a product called Plant Skid, and I always forget how to spell Plant Skid. It's and you can buy this at Canadian Tire or any garden center. Plant Skid. Okay, there it is. Plant, where'd it go? Plant, P-L-A-N-T-S, S as in Sam, and then K as in kite, Y as in yellow, and then two D's, like D as in Dobbin. So Plant Skid, and it is very available. Urban Nature Store, like I say, Lee Valley Tools, garden centers all over the place. It is an herbivore repellent. It repels any animals that eat your foliage and your plants. That includes deer and elk and bunny rabbits and groundhogs and you know, anybody out there. And it's a long-lasting spray. So you spray it on the plants following the directions. And I have used it here in the fall to spray my tasty plants to avoid deer damage over the winter.
Good.
So I would try that if I were you, unless you want to set up, like I said, the physical barriers to keep the bunnies out.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for the question there, Sheila. Now, I was thinking, I got to tell you two things. I have to be very careful what I say in the air because I've already got a text from my wife who's up here who said, I make you rhubarb custard pie every season. She says, if not two or three.
Oh, my goodness. And is it the right recipe? Oh, is it grandma's recipe?
You know what? All I meant to say was rhubarb, it brings me back really good memories. And yes, in the last handful of years, absolutely. Gail picked up on this conversation that we had a few years ago, and she does. Absolutely. You know, so absolutely make it. And they are delicious.
I love it.
So I was just thinking.
Thanks, Gail.
Yeah. keeping me in line.
You're the best.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you know how sometimes we have, you know, shows like we'll have merchandise, you know, well, you'll have, you know, like Zoomer. Zoomer has mugs, right, that they will send out to people. And I just was thinking that we should brand a slingshot with the garden show for all those rabbits and animals. You could send them out to the callers. And so they can, you know, because you could like hit them with a blueberry or something like that. That would, you know, just scare them off.
or a chestnut or something.
Yeah, something like that. That would help with those rabbits and the hares and all the critters that keep eating, because we get calls fairly often.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Different people living in different places have such different issues going on, right? You know, urban versus suburban versus rural and versus everything in between, all the different issues that people deal with.
Yeah. Well, we've got a call. This is not suburban or urban at all. We're going out to Turkey Point now. We are going to talk to Sunday. Welcome to the show, Sunday.
Yes. Good morning.
I
bought a butterfly bush a few years ago when it was quite small and planted it. It did very well. It has done very well for a couple of years now. And I usually cut it back quite a bit every year. Now, last year it got up to about, I'd say 9 feet tall. Beautiful. Wow. And I only cut it back to about 6 feet because the nursery insisted that I should only cut it back a third of its growth. So now it's there. It's got some new growth down near the bottom, but now I've got all this ugly bare branches sticking up, and I don't know whether I should think about cutting those or...
Yes. Very good question. Thank you. Thank you for your call. The nursery insisted that you only prune a third of a plant off during the growing season. And that does make sense because it's just hard on a plant to, you know, really strip it down when it's actively growing. But in the spring, and a butterfly bush is a good example, very often we almost treat them like a perennial instead of a bush. So the root stays alive. In the spring, when you start to see the green growing off of the along the bark of that bush, it's usually, like you say, down at the bottom. That's when you get out your loppers or your pruners and you chop the whole thing down to where you are starting to see the green emerge. And in my experience, sometimes the green will be, you know, 2 inches above ground level. Sometimes the green will be a whole foot above ground level. But whatever, wherever it is, you cut down to the green.
It's about a foot right now, so I can cut all those ugly dead limbs out then.
Definitely. Cut it out. Don't worry about that one-third rule, because in the spring, we can do it. We always, always remove dead wood anytime we see it, and that is all dead.
Okay, good, good. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, thank you,
Sunday. Have a good day.
Thanks. All the way from Turkey Point.
I bet you Sunday was a first-time caller, you know. I don't remember her ever calling in the past.
Well, you know what? We'll just assume, because it wasn't marked as a first time, but she may not have mentioned it to Carlos.
Right.
And so I will give her the garden wings anyway.
Well,
here you go, Sunday.
There you go. Cowbell. Virtual wings.
Yeah, the virtual wings. I'm going to give out the numbers again. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere toll-free in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We're going to go to Mississauga now. I guess that would be suburban, wouldn't it? Yes, suburban, Georgia. Georgia, and Georgia is a first-time caller. Welcome to the show, Georgia.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you your
Charlie.
Wings, okay?
There you go. Welcome.
Thank you. Charlie,
Charlie,
I would like to know, how can I transplant orchids into a little bigger pot? The ones that they're in right now is very small, and I was thinking of transferring them, but I don't know how.
Hmm.
Can you give me some kind of advice how to do it?
Sure. So here's what I would do. Number one, when you're going to transplant an orchid, make sure you've got the proper pot.
Okay.
You don't just go into any old plastic pot.
Mm-hmm.
Bare minimum, you're going to need a terracotta pot. So, you know, that's that clay pot, which allows lots of great air and moisture circulation. Best case, you actually go to a store that carries pots for orchids.
Mm-hmm.
And those will be, it'll look like a pot, but it'll have extra drainage holes. So not just holes in the bottom, but it'll have holes in the side. So you're probably in a little tiny 2 or 3 or even 4 inch pot now. So you're going to go up one size. So if you're in a 4 inch pot now, you'll go up to a 6. If you're in a 2 inch pot now, you'll probably go to a 4. So never sort of jump too radically or the orchid will go into shock. Uh-huh. Look at what it's planted into. It could be planted into moss, like a spongy sphag moss. It could be planted into bark. It's definitely not planted into soil. So whatever it's planted
in. Do I use just bark alone or what?
Pardon?
Do I just use the bark alone to transplant them?
You do. Again, when you're shopping for that pot, you're going to shop for orchid bark. And you'll soak the bark in advance because it's very dry in the bag. Uh-huh. And it's not that hard. It's just a matter of loosening it out of the current pot, getting the new pot ready to go with fresh media, whatever it is, uh-huh. and then putting that little orchid into the new pot, same level as it is now. Make sure all the roots that are on the surface stay on the surface.
Okay.
The roots that are down in the pot go into the new pot, and lots of new media goes around those roots. And, you know, you might have to use a pencil or a chopstick or something just to firm the roots down. Sometimes you can't get your fingers in there because there's so many roots. But
yes.
Just make sure it's firm in the pot and then, of course, back into its proper location. So not that hard to do, and now is the right time to do it.
Okay, and then how often do I have to water it?
Well, how often do you water it now?
Once a week.
Okay, so I'm not a big fan of watering on the calendar. I basically water my orchids when they start feeling light.
Okay.
They take less water in the winter than they do in the summer. This time of year, I might be watering my orchids every 5 or 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as you probably know, the best way to water an orchid is with a big pail of room temperature rainwater and dunk the whole orchid pot and all into the water and really, really water it thoroughly. And then again, don't do it again till it's nice and light and ready to get some more moisture. One thing I would mention, Georgia, the Southern Ontario Orchid Society, so S as in Sam, mm-hmm. O as in Ontario, another O as in orchid, and mm-hmm. another S as in Sam, so SOOS dot, I think, CA or dot org, whatever it is. So just Google Southern Ontario Orchid Society. They have a great website, and they do have tips on orchid care.
Okay, thank you very much, Charlie.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Georgia. And we have something. I'm looking at something that we don't have very often. We have a flurry of first-time callers. Oh, my goodness. Everybody on the line is a first-time caller. I am getting a workout this morning. So let's go to Earl. Earl in Guelph. Good morning. Welcome to the Garden Show, Earl.
Hello.
And you get your garden wings. There you go.
Actually, it's Ron in Guelph.
It's Ron.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, okay. Hi, my
Ron.
Goodness, Carlos must be asleep at the wheel there. What's going on? So, I'm glad I rang the bell. Wake him up. Welcome, Ron.
They know who Ron and Guelph is at Fight Back with Louise Nimer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, welcome to our show.
Well, I listen, unless I'm on the road, most of them I can get to AM 740, but if you're traveling up, even on stretches of the 401 down near Kingston and Prescott, I lose the signal. It's the same thing. When I'm going through the Canadian Shield, I lose the signal.
You're right.
But anyway, okay, so I'm not sure if this topic's been discussed before, but I would imagine it has. So my dog and every other dog peed on the same spot on my grass over the winter. what can I do to try and restore that grass?
Well, you got to train them to pee in different spots for starters.
I got during the wintertime, I got lazy and I just let him out the front door and he'd go. Yeah. Now I train him to go over against the stop sign on the street.
Good idea. Get the weeds growing out the stop sign. So, of course, we know what happens when dogs pee anywhere.
Every other dog is going to want to pee in the same spot too, right?
They do tend to want to mark their territory on top of another dog's mark. So great if we can get them moving around a bit. But remember, what is urine made out of? It's got lots and lots of ammonia in it. And it's the ammonia that causes the grass to die. It's not, you know, the toxicity part is just that it's very how do I explain? It's like a salt. It's just, it kills the grass just like road salt kills grasses. So what you need to do in the spring is pray for rain. And if we don't get lots of rain, water, 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 because water will neutralize the ammonium in the soil that has built up over the winter. You will still have to do some top dressing and overseeding that Dean was mentioning that he does at his place. So a little bit of good quality topsoil, triple mix, something like that, you know, quarter of an inch, half an inch, roughing. Like if it's really dead, obviously you're raking out the dead stuff first. You're getting down some fresh soil to bring the yard, the lawn back to level. And then you're sprinkling some fresh seed. If the dogs are going to continue to insist on using that spot, I'd use like a small, you know, those little wire fences that you poke into the ground. They're a great training aid actually with many dogs because they won't go over it. They'll run into it and stop, and just fence off that area until the grass starts to grow again, and kind of use that as a way to move them to different areas. And when you see your dog peeing, you know, or any dog peeing, have a watering can handy all through the summer and, you know, until winter. Just pour water on right away and the grass will not suffer as much.
Okay. Thanks for the question there, Ron. Appreciate it. Do have to run. We have to take another break, but we will be back with more right here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back with The Garden Show. I'm Dean Holland here with Charlie Dobbin. And I have to give a shout out to Carlos because Carlos works very, very hard. And actually, it's the exact opposite today. We have so many callers coming through. He's moving a mile a minute. That guy is what's happening today. Yeah. Okay, let's go to Brian. We have Brian in Brampton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Brian. And you are a first-time caller.
That is true.
Okay.
Welcome to the show.
There you go. There you garden wings, sir. What do you got for Charlie?
I have a cottage with a weed-filled lawn that I don't want to mow. So we're up there only every 3 weeks. And I'm tempted to go to a clover lawn and wondering the best strategy to do that, whether I dig up as much of the grass as possible and then start afresh, or whether I can throw the clover seeds amongst the grass and weeds, or whether I should take out some of the weeds. And then the second part of the question would be the type of clover, flowering clover. I'm tempted, as much as I like bees, not to go that route, as it may interrupt the badminton court, which is partially,
Everybody has such specific needs. It's so interesting. Okay, well, that's a great question, and thank you for calling, and you know, welcome to the show, of course. Yes, I'm a big fan of clover, and I absolutely agree. Going to the cottage, the last thing you want to do is have to mow the lawn every time you show up. Is your cottage surrounded by things like pine trees and spruce trees, lots of evergreens, or what's the vegetation like?
It's up in Manitou and predominantly cedar trees.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So eliminate the lawn at cottage. Well, that's the thing. The easiest thing to do by far is to mow the lawn as short as you can. Yeah. Now would not be the optimal time. I'd probably wait till fall to do this. Yeah. And so you'd mow as short as you can. You would distribute some fresh soil. You would probably buy some bag soil. I don't know how big this area is. You might need to bring in a yard of topsoil or triple mix. You'd rake the soil all out. Then you would sprinkle your seed. In this case, I would recommend white clover as your choice. You'd sprinkle the seed, you'd give it another light raking, and you'd leave it alone. Next spring, what's so cool about clover is once it starts to grow, it tends to grow so well and it outgrows everything else that you can very quickly lose your weeds and lose your existing grass to the clover. However, unmowed clover will flower, and as you point out, badminton and bees and clover don't always mix. So if you're going to grow clover, you're going to have to mow it if you don't want to have a lot of flowers. Right. If you don't want to have flowers, you know what you might want to consider? There is a seed out there. It is supplied by several different suppliers, but particularly from its original inventors, which is Wildflower Farms. Wildflower Farms is not that, well, I mean, it's a bit far from you, but it's up Aurelia way. Wildflower Farms invented something called Eco Lawn. Eco Lawn, Eco Grass. I think it's maybe it's Eco Grass, ECO Grass. And you can get a hold of seed, which is a fescues, no flowers, very, very simple to grow grasses. And those grasses will grow and do not need to be mowed. They kind of, they grow up and then they flop over kind of like a haircut, that like hair that needs to be cut, but it does, mm-hmm. then they stop growing. So it's a nice low maintenance lawn, and that might be your better bet, because then you're not going to have issues with bees and flowering, clover, etc. So go look for Eco Lawn, Eco Grass. You will find it at suppliers as well as its originators, Wildflower Farms.
Okay.
Plant in the fall.
Great.
Okay. Good luck with that, Brian. Yeah, and good luck with your badminton game too. we have to take a quick break. We do have some more callers on the line, but I have to take a quick break, so we will be back with more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yes, we are back with The Garden Show, and we have, my goodness, less than 8 minutes to go and some callers on the line. Let's get right to it. We have Marg calling from Paris, and you are a first-time caller, Marg.
Yes, I am.
Morning. Welcome.
What do you got for Charlie there?
I tuned in late to your show, and I know you've already been speaking about rhubarb, so if you've already had this question, I'm sorry. I get red dots on the rhubarb leaves, and I looked online, and they said it's some kind of a fungus. And I just wondered what you think.
It likely is. And you're right. We did get this question earlier in the show from Diane in Dorchester. She was finding her leaves disappearing and getting spots and all kinds of things. So a couple of things. Make sure your rhubarb is planted where it gets a minimum of 6 hours of direct sun every day. So lots and lots of sun. Make sure it's a reasonably fertile but well-drained soil. Rhubarb does not want a soggy spot. It wants very good drainage. All the rain we've been getting this year has really encouraged a lot of growth and moist soil. And those are the conditions that are optimal for fungal growth. So you probably, many of us are going to start seeing fungal, you know, spots and rusts and powdery mildews because of the high humidity and the high moisture levels. All you can do is optimize the sunshine, optimize the drainage and air circulation. So make sure that the rhubarb is out in an area where the wind is drying the leaves. As the sun goes down, the leaves are not wet, because you can't, you know, you can't control the rain, but you can certainly control where you plant it. And that will minimize the fungal issues. And of course, next year is a whole new year. So you've got all new leaves next year. If it's a really old patch of rhubarb, consider digging it up and dividing and separating some of these plants out from each other. Again, that will open up the air and the sun penetration.
It's still safe to use the rhubarb, even when it's not that.
Yep, not going to hurt you at all.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for the question.
What's the latest you should pick the rhubarb?
Sorry, I missed that.
What's the latest that you should pull a rhubarb?
Good question. I mean, it's usually based on the size and quality of the stems, because, of course, we keep talking about rhubarb leaves, but we're not actually eating the blades of the leaves. We're only eating the stems. And you do need to allow some you need some leaves on the plant as summer continues, because otherwise the plant will die or go dormant. So always leave leaves behind. Expect flowering soon, and you'll stop picking as soon as the flowers show up, likely.
Fabulous. Thanks for the question there, Marg. Good luck with your rhubarb.
Yeah,
we are going to go right to Niagara Falls. We have Kathy on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Kathy.
Thank you.
Morning.
I just wanted to ask Charlie about moving a blue azure.
A blue?
It's called a blue azure. It looks more like a bush than just a plant. It's like 4 feet tall. And it's beautiful. It's bushy and everything, but I'm afraid if I move it, I'm liable to kill it, you know.
Does it get blue flowers in August, September?
It has blue flowers right now.
Oh, it does. Hmm. Okay, so the blue azure is a cultivar name, and I'm just trying to see what it is. So you can't... sage. There's a blue azure sage. Is it a real smelly plant? Do you use it?
I just use it for decoration because it's
blue right now.
It's a beautiful blue.
Tall, delicate, blue flowers, square stems. So it's blooming right now. So you can move it when it's not blooming. And I would never move anything in the middle of the summer. Unless, of course, you have to move it. If there's construction starting or you're moving your house and moving away and you want to take it with you, I get it. You have to move it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, leave it where it is right now. It will stop flowering at some point. Uh-huh. You will deadhead. You'll get out your pruners. You'll cut off those sort of curled up flowers when it's done flowering. And then you'll let it be as a plant. Many sages will come back, or salvias will flower again as the summer continues. Not as bountifully as they do now, but they'll often form more flowers. And your time to move it is August, late August, early September. And you can move it just about anywhere. Just make sure that it is getting that full sun we talked about that the rhubarb loves. So that's 6 hours of sun and well-drained soil.
It gives big seed pods on it. I'm wondering, could I plant the seeds and start it that way, or should I just move the whole plant?
You can, when the seed, these are last year's seed pods that are on the plant, because it wouldn't have gone to seed yet, I can't imagine. So what you would do is you can certainly harvest the seeds when they're mature, so that would be probably in the fall. Break open the pods, assuming that they're dry and mature, and sprinkle seeds on the surface of the soil. And then those seeds need to be outside for the winter, and they are likely to grow in the spring if they are given the right conditions to do so. So, you know, moisture, sunshine, et cetera, et cetera. So they might. If it's a cultivar, they will be seeds that are sterile. If it's an open pollinated plant, then it often will seed and, you know, become a problem, actually, because it'll invade your entire garden. So, I mean, it's worth a try. Seed starting can be a lot of fun. You could also bring the seeds in and put them in the refrigerator for the winter and start them indoors in the spring. So either way, but you have to give it winter. Okay.
Thanks for the call there. Okay, we got one more. Hopefully the question, but we will be really quick. We're going to go to Ina, and Ina is in Fergus. Welcome to the Garden Show, Ina.
Hi.
Morning.
My question is about transplanting a trillium.
That's a hard one. Is it at your home and you want to move it, or it's out in the woods and you want to move it?
It's in a wooded area at the back of my property that is, you know, totally not tended at all.
Right.
And I want to move it forward.
So closer.
It's still in a wooded area, but gets a little bit more light, and I have a flower bed there.
Yeah. So as you know, trilliums go completely dormant for the summer. So you have to mark where it is now. Otherwise it'll disappear. When it's finished flowering, technically you could move it. Keep in mind that technically it's against the law to move trilliums. So make sure there's no police around when you do this. when you move it, the hard thing is giving it the exact conditions that it has now. Very hard to transplant trilliums. I know, I've tried. You can buy trilliums that are raised in cultivation as opposed to taken from the wild. So buying cultivated trilliums is usually your better bet for planting closer to into your garden, and let the wild ones be wild. And that's all I can say because we're all at a racetrack. Thanks for your call, Ina. Thanks, Dean. Couldn't have done any of this without you orchestrating and conducting it all. And thanks, ton, Carlos. Thanks to all the great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.